Welcome to Crazy Shit in Real Estate, a weekly podcast where I walk you through some of the wildest, most unbelievable stories you'll hear from the world of real estate. If you like real estate and you love crazy, this is a podcast for you. And welcome back to the podcast. I'm Lee Brown, and you're listening to Crazy Shit in Real Estate. And today's crazy shit is not going to be anything you've ever heard before, because nothing in real estate is the same as anything you've ever heard before. Today, I'm super excited to bring y'all Aaron Hendon as our new guest. Aaron, welcome to the show.
Hi, Lee. Thanks for having me on.
So tell all of our loyal subscribers where you're located, how long you've been messing around real estate, and any tidbits they need to know about you.
Sure. Well, let's see. I live on a small island off the coast of Seattle called Vashon Island. It's a little island of hippies and artists, rednecks and hippies. And love it out there. I've been in real estate, selling residential real estate for about 5 years, although on and off investing in real estate for probably about 15. I have a entrepreneurial background. Well, let's see, I went to art school, so I have an art degree, and that made me eligible to work in food service anywhere. So I waited tables and then started baking bread for the restaurant I was waiting tables for, and then opened a bakery, and then, you know, tripped around to various other kinds of service industry jobs and wound up with a sales career. And then from there, just found my way to real estate, and can't believe it took me this long to find it. I just love the whole thing. Love the whole entrepreneurial nature of it. And I love working with people in this transaction. I just love it.
And, you know, the best realtors waited tables in their background. So, I mean, it's honestly the next best place.
You know, Lee, it's funny. I used to write this as part of my bio, was that my favorite job is waiting tables, because there's nothing to do but take care of people, you know? And I feel like the same thing in real estate. No one else.
And you do learn how to hold your tongue when you're waiting tables, because you cannot spout off at customers and expect to get paid. And same thing in real estate. You have the frustrating moments, but you have to suck it up until you get off stage before you have that moment of venting that you sometimes have to have.
That's exactly right. You absolutely got to mirror and match and learn what they want and go deliver it, whether you want it or not, whether, you know, they're not asked, not your table. You know what I mean? It's not your meal, not your house.
Exactly. So what do you have to tell us today, if it stems from baking bread or being from the starving art world to working on the island out there in the far left part of America? Tell us about what you've encountered that you can't believe you've encountered.
Yeah. Well, I think the biggest thing, the craziest shit that I think exists, is higher way real estate is set up is insane. You know, it got me, the way people, and this isn't just in general, but, you know, the way people choose a realtor is insane. People choose a realtor with all the due diligence. They choose going out to eat dinner. You know, where are we going to eat tonight? I don't know. Let's go check Yelp. Or Mary tells me this is a great restaurant. Or, you know, I've seen the signs for this one all over the place. Let's go there. And that's how people choose how to eat dinner. But that's also they choose a realtor. Who are we going to use as a realtor? I don't know. Let's go check stars on a website. Oh, yeah. Or Mary says this one's really good. Or I've seen this guy's signs all over town. Let's use him. It's literally the same amount of due diligence for a $50 meal versus a $500,000 house. That's insane. That makes me crazy. I can't believe.
Well, and it goes into this thing I have an issue with why. So, all right, so. Continue your restaurant analogy, your favorite restaurant may not even be that good. It's just your favorite, and that's where you've gone. They know your name, and they know what table you want to sit at. But then people look at real estate, and they would pick the person they like over the person who is competent. And I haven't figured that out at all. And like you said, it's the sheer size of the transaction would tell you that you might slow down and think a little more. But I'd say on average, most residential consumers, and I think commercials probably different as a beast when it comes to this, but on the residential side, why do they pick likability over competence?
Well, it's interesting. You know, I really got sort of obsessed with this, right? Because my team, I'm a Keller Williams team, and our team sells real estate at 5% over average. You know, everything in Seattle's on fire, but whatever the average is in the neighborhood, we go 5% more than that statistically. Like, we can prove it. And yet nobody ever asks, right? I sit down at a listing presentation. I have yet to have a human being say, hey, will you show me your track record? Right. So no one does that. So that made me crazy. So I started to investigate it. And I am a podcast aficionado, and I just always am educating myself and listening to stuff, listening to your show and listening to all these other things. I was listening to Freakonomics Radio. And
I love Freakonomics. That's my favorite podcast. Besides,
I love those guys, right? And they were doing an interview with a guy named Michael Lewis, who is the author of Moneyball and The Big Short and a whole bunch of other stuff.
Yes, yes.
Love
all really
him.
Good
and
books.
Great book. And he wrote a book called The Undoing Project. And I was like, oh, what's that? It's the story of two Israeli psychologists who develop what's called behavioral economics. The psychologists that got into the world of economists and created this domain, this field called behavioral economics, whereby discovering, inventing, distinguishing the ways human beings operate that are irrational. So to get it really short, traditional economics stands on a foundation that says all human beings operate in their own best interest, that they're rational, that they do things in a rational manner, and they will always choose things in their own best interest. Except that's freaking crazy, Lee, because you don't know one person that operates rationally. No one operates rationally. Everyone eats things they shouldn't eat and spends money they shouldn't spend and does things irrationally. So basically, economics is, the foundation of economics is completely faulty. And they recognize this and had the background, the statistical background, to be able to prove it, demonstrate it, the ways human beings operate. And it turns out we take mental shortcuts rather than thinking, take mental shortcuts. So, for example, you know, the whole thing with top of mind, you, me as a realtor are always trying to stay top of mind, big industry jargon, staying top of mind. But what does that really mean? It means that you want your name available to a human being when it comes time for them to transact. If it's available, if it comes to mind quickly, the brain will use it, substitute it for having to really think. Which is why putting your signs all over the neighborhood and sending postcards every month and doing those follow-up calls and all the work we do, the 44 touches every year to stay top of mind, works, because a human being won't think if they don't have to. And if you're available, you will, if you're at the top of their mind, you will be used. And that's one of the shortcuts. So I started to get into it and really investigate what are these shortcuts. And I came, there's like five or six of them, and I wound up writing this book on those shortcuts, the way people do it. But it is exactly why people do it. We will operate in any way that'll have us not think. If we don't have to think, we won't. And it's
so would you guess that's going to get worse in the future, since the adult attention span continues to deteriorate? And it's down to like 3.7 seconds now. So do you think this is going to be a bigger and bigger issue? And if so, how do you solve that as a competent professional?
Yeah, it's interesting. I never thought about it getting better or worse. So I don't know. I would suspect, I mean, I think you're right. I think the obviousness of your question is, you know, the answer is right there. Our attention span is getting shorter and shorter. We are thinking less and less.
Less.
And as we get bombarded by more and more media and advertising, and, you know, we're designed to avoid all that noise, right? And how you battle it, how I battle it, is by pointing it out. There's some measure of data that would indicate that just slowing down a little bit will allow you to start thinking, you know, giving people a moment's pause. So if you can point it out and have them at least listen to you as a consultant for a moment, you can then begin to drive a wedge between the automaticity and some real thinking. So, I mean, on one hand, you know, it's a $5 business card. You know, it's a book. It's like, here, it's, you know, it's a book. It's a 200-page book. So it looks good and it sounds good. And authority is one of those mental shortcuts that we will take. You know, a human being will substitute authority, you know, someone else's say-so for having to think of it. So I'm not above using the shortcuts for my own, you know, benefit. But so to slow them down and say, hey, listen, here's something that would actually give you the opportunity to think about it. And then, you know, we'll see. Because frankly, I mean, between me and you, and I know you're like this from listening to you for long enough, I don't really want to work with people that are not going to slow down, you know, that, listen, you are committed to using, you know, Redfin, knock yourself out. You know, you're going to lose 2%. I can prove you're going to lose 2% while you think you're saving 2%. Actually, while you think you're saving 5%, knock yourself out, you know, now, go ahead. You want to overprice your house? I don't really want to work with you anyway. So on one hand, if I can't get them to slow down, it's sort of a filter for me. Like, okay, someone who doesn't care. And then the people that do slow down are really grateful for the opportunity.
Well, now, to be fair, the agent that's not you and do things differently, they might care. They might just be a different style. So let's just, you know, we'll give that.
Yeah.
That I meant like little bit there.
That's right. That's right. I meant the Redfin agent or someone who's going to, you know, overprice their home and let them get away with it just so that they could put a sign in the yard. Because that's, look, that's
but remember, they're just one company, though. There's still some good agents at that company. We can't paint all that's agents right. at all companies with a red brush.
You're absolutely right. And I you're absolutely right, Lee. And I don't mean, and I know I said it in a way that I meant it that way. And you're absolutely right. Thanks for pointing it out. There are good people, and it is a whole bunch of.
Yeah, there's good and crap at people. Every single that's brokerage right. and that's every right. single market.
100%. 100%.
But that is the beauty, though, of real estate. There's a butt for every saddle. So for every that's different right. kind of consumer need as far as time or energy invested, there's also a realtor that matches that. I think the key just becomes how do you find a way to message it? And I wish that the average home seller would, I mean, I'm like you, I wish they'd slow down and ask a couple of questions, but they won't all do it. And it's amazing to me, 18 years in the business, I still can't figure out why the home, which is for most people, their primary tool for future wealth, and the only tool some people have for future wealth, they treat it with such a cavalier attitude. And I look at that and I say, well, maybe it's the fault of the real estate world, because we've treated houses with a fairly cavalier attitude as well, when you consider the fact that most of the time, the homeowner is going to pay just about the same price for the likable, uneducated, incompetent friend as they are for the highly competent professional who does all the research. So you look back at how our industry was structured from the beginning, I'd say it's not just the end consumer's fault, it's the entire profession's fault for never putting in a tier system of sorts to say, 100%. This is, you're getting an apprentice. You shouldn't pay that much for an apprentice. This person is a master of their craft. They should cost more. Instead, the consumer pays the same thing across the board. So maybe, is that part of why consumers don't bother asking questions? Because they pay the same thing roughly?
Oh my gosh. It's so great that you said that, because I was thinking about in prepping for the show with you and talk the conversation. I thought of the crazy shit. The other piece of crazy shit is we did this to ourselves. We 100% realtors have done this to themselves, that there is no apprenticeship program, that there's no, you know, journeyman master, that there's no conversation for that. Why would a consumer, we have trained them to not think there's any difference, or at the very least, we haven't trained them to think there's a difference. Check this out. I've done the statistics on this too. We are the lowest bar to entry for any profession in the world. The person that cuts my hair, and I'm almost bald, the person that cuts my hair, 1,000 hours,
right.
almost a year. The realtor, 90 hours. In no state in the union is it more than 100.
And think about it too, like talk about hairdressers. If you're brand new out of cosmetology school, you're not getting hired by the best salon in town. You're starting at Great Clips until you build a book of business. So where is that for real estate? Where's the Great Clips of real estate?
It's
where you might get somebody that's smart and new, and you might get somebody who sucks, but regardless, they haven't yet graduated to the next level. And I can't figure that out, except that brokers don't want to make less money.
Yeah. So it's my job and your job, Lee, as a seasoned agent, as someone on that path to mastery, to point it out, say, listen, why don't you ask, you know, to the consumer, why don't you actually interview agents and get their track record? Here's mine. Why don't you ask 5 agents and have them all give you their track record of selling homes in this neighborhood or selling homes at this price point, really, over the last year, and see who's actually done the best job.
So what would you say in Aaron's world, top 2 things anybody selling a home should ask the realtors they're interviewing?
Yeah, I think they should ask the percent over asking price they've gotten for the home. Okay, so you want to know how much over asking price they've got. If it's a market that's a down market, then it'd be how much under. But either way, you're going to get a percentage of how accurate they are and how good they are about pricing their home. And it's also going to answer all the questions you could possibly have about their marketing plan, which as a consumer, you have no qualifications to judge the marketing plan. I know people don't want to hear that, but they don't have any, they have no idea what a good marketing plan is.
Realtors don't have a marketing plan. They have an advertising plan. It's 2 different things. So let's just call that what it is.
But most don't. That's true. I'm with you.
There's very few that understand what marketing is.
Right. And so one thing is how much over asking. And the second thing I'd like, I think they should ask. You could ask any other number of questions. You could ask, do you work on a team? And I always think someone who has a team behind them is more valuable than someone who's just solo, someone who's trying to do every accountability versus someone who has a transaction coordinator or listing manager like that. Always better to have a team behind you. You could ask, you could certainly ask what their commission is and then try and negotiate them down. And if they don't negotiate down easily, then hire them. If you can't negotiate them down, hire that one as opposed to the person that you can negotiate down. Because if they can't defend their own equity, they are not defending your equity.
Very true. The only thing I'll argue with you on is teams are not always better than individual agents. It depends on the structure and the communication and cohesion of a team. Because I've met some solo agents that are very laser beam focused on their business and they refer out excess. So instead of going for big numbers, they go for boutique level service. So I think it just depends on who you're interviewing. Honestly, you might be interviewing the best solo agent on the planet. You might be interviewing a team that is a hot mess and vice versa. So it's just more questions to ask. But the consumer should ask about structure. Who's going to answer the phone when I call is a great question to ask.
Great question. Great question. Do you work nights and weekends? You know, some customers, for them, that's a, you know, no problem. For some, it's a stopper, you know?
Correct.
But you know, the number one, I'm sure this is the case for you. You know, the number one thing I hear from people who are dissatisfied with their realtor was they wouldn't call them back. You know,
right.
I couldn't get them to call me back, which is the, we're going to now go back to waiting tables. Really? Really? You don't have time to call someone back? You can't manage that part? You can't get back to the table to deliver the check? Are you insane? You have no right.
Well, I'll tell you what's funny is like I made a bunch of phone calls at the end of 2017 to help realtors finish their RPAC, their Realtors Political Action Committee investments for the year. And the realtors who are most heavily invested in advocacy for our industry, so the major investors, they, to a man, answered their phone. And were all of them available having conversations because they're that dialed into every aspect of the business. The realtors that I call that aren't investing at all, that's when I got all the voicemails. And the voicemails being the number you have reached is,
oh my God,
has, you know, voicemail's not set up, or the voicemail is full, or the person who it says hello. So it's like you can even use the political acumen of the realtor to create a barrier of who's paying attention and who's not. And it does go back to this telephone thing, but I was like, that's a great way to tell the difference. And that's another reason why if somebody asks me of the realtor they should use in another market, I only recommend that they use people who are major investors in the realtor party, because that person doesn't just want commission on this house. They want to make sure there's a profession for the future.
That's brilliant. I love that.
So we're at the end of our time here. So give me one thing you think is going to happen in 2018. Be a prognosticator for me since you're a January guest.
One thing that's going to happen in 2018 is you're going to see probably two more hikes of the interest rate, and you're going to see a cooling off in the areas that are, you know, my neighborhood, a leveling off rather than a pop. I don't anticipate a bubble break, but I do think things are going to cool off, level off. It will not be, as overheated as it's been.
I do think we'll see a leveling out, but it won't be the great recession that we saw in 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Whew, thank heavens.
No.
All right. So, Aaron, if anybody's looking for an amazing realtor wandering around the islands of the West Coast, how can they reach you and your team and get a copy of that book?
Great. They can just, email me at Aaron, A-A-R-O-N, at canco.me. So, C-A-N-D-C-O, canco.me. Just shoot me an email. I work the entire Puget Sound, which is what the area out here is called. You know, not just the islands. I work all Seattle and the whole area. My team does, my whole team. And I'm happy to help, happy to talk, happy to send people a copy of the book if they're interested. Actually, I wound up with a whole bunch of typos in it, so I'll send you one. Just shoot me an email.
Do they get extra credit if they get a copy with a typo and they find the typo?
Yes. Yes.
They get an extra gold star on their listing.
They get a gold star if they find a typo I didn't find. How's that?
You go. Okay. Yeah, so if you're a prospective seller out there, there's your reason to call Aaron, get the book, find the typo, and then squeeze him on the appointment.
Right. And the book is good for anywhere in the country. I mean, the book applies. The logic and the concepts in the book apply anywhere in the country, not just Seattle.
Awesome. Well, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. I appreciate you coming on here to the soapbox with me a little bit, and maybe we'll get this thing turned around at some point in the near future.
Lee, thanks so much for having me on. It's such a pleasure.
All right. If you're listening to this, I know you've already subscribed for more episodes to come in the future. And never forget that all of Aaron's contact information will be in the show notes for this episode. If you weren't writing diligently, or frankly, you weren't paying attention at that point, but you can reach him for the future. And if you're a realtor, broker, investor, inspector, lender, or a regular normal person who's had your own crazy side of real estate, give me a shout at Lee Brown on Twitter to be featured in a future episode or any of the social networks. And until then, we'll see you next time.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Crazy Shit in Real Estate podcast. If you liked what you heard, please visit crazyshitinrealestate.com, where you can access the full show notes for this episode, additional content produced exclusively for listeners, and much, much more.